I'm really, really pleased. Venerable Connie and I go back a long way over continents, and it's just wonderful to see you again, Connie, and to welcome you here. Connie and I have chatted a little bit about what specifically would we like her to talk about, because as she shared with me, she has a wealth of information she could share, and thoughts and experience in what connected to universal education as it developed and grew. And because this is basically a forum for facilitators who work with universal education programs, we really decided and felt that it would be most helpful if we can talk about, if Connie would address in particular the pedagogy and methodologies that we've used in order to share universal education. That doesn't mean, of course, Connie, whatever you wish to speak about, we're happy to hear about. But that was what we thought. We'd try and narrow it down a little bit so that all our facilitators who are here tonight might take away something really useful for them in their activities. So just a few notes about Connie's background. She's dedicated years of her life to creating universal education programs and resources, has been very committed in that regard. She's been a Dharma teacher since 1983. And she's brought her experience into the field of pedagogy and education. And she also has since 2015, she's created a long-term program at the Institute Lama Tsongkhapa, where she works in Italy, called The Art of Happiness, which she based on His Holiness's book by the same title. She's part of the core staff at Lama Tsongkhapa in the Mind Science Academy there. She's teaching at and collaborating with several Italian universities and graduate programs. And Venerable Connie brings a wealth of knowledge and technique in developing, training, and facilitating universal education programs. So I can't think of a better person to listen to for the next 30 minutes about, all that sort of that information that is so valuable to us as we move forward working in this field. So over to you, Connie, and thank you so much for being here today. Look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you. Thank you, Marian. And thank you, everybody. And gosh, it's incredible to see old friends, lots of old friends, lots of people I haven't seen for quite a few years. And it's really great. Thank you. What I'd like to talk about today has to do with this question of what is pedagogy? And what did Lama say about it? I think partly because this has been a huge question for me as a teacher. And I've gained personally an incredible amount from studying Lama's words and transcripts and really trying to delve into what Lama was conveying. As Peter was saying, we didn't have Lama for very long. And so there were really only a few years in which Lama was talking to us about all of this stuff. And at the same time, in those few years, most of us were, heavens, really, really young. We were just young in years, but we were particularly young in the Dharma. And it really takes time for these things to percolate, to absorb, to integrate. It takes time for each of us to understand with any depth the teachings that we're receiving, the advice that we're receiving. It really takes time. And, you know, when I look back personally on listening, you know, we're in 2019, listening to Lama in 1976 about these things, and how, you know, in 1976, I was 23. So, unbelievably young, and incredibly young in the Dharma. And so, you know, lovely words Lama was saying to me, and I had not a clue. I really believe I had not a clue really in with any depth whatsoever what Lama was actually trying to convey. And at the same time, you know, I was among people, and some of you were there as well, who were trying to realize, you know, trying to actually put into practice and apply what Lama was teaching, apply it personally in individual practice, but also apply it in terms of trying to realize a project that Lama had given this name to of universal education, and struggling, honestly struggling. You know, what Peter was saying was absolutely true. We had incredibly limited resources at the time, speaking externally, you know, resources in terms of money, resources in terms of connection, resources in all of those terms. But frankly, I think we also had limited inner resources at the time. Potential, endless, but, you know, real deep understanding, I think that we were all very young. And it's taken all of us many years, I think, to contemplate, to meditate, to chew on the things that Lama taught us in all aspects of the Dharma, of, you know, what is universal education, and so on, in order to come out with greater depth of understanding after some time, and after actually, you know, struggling with a lot of this. So there are two areas that I'd like to sort of talk about. One, I'm going to refer back to one of the quotations that Peter mentioned, and bring in another one that's related. So, you know, one is when Lama said, you know, in Buddhism, we have an incredible educational structure, universal education from birth to death. Okay. Educational structure can mean how one thinks about the process of learning and the process of teaching as an act of facilitating learning. If we're talking about education, we are talking about people learning stuff. People transforming themselves in a positive direction through learning. So Lama's telling us here one phrase: in Buddhism, we have an incredible educational structure. It's worthwhile to actually think about, what does that mean? In real concrete terms, what's he referring to? So one of the things that I believe Lama was referring to was something that, you know, as soon as we study the Lamrim, as soon as we kind of sit down for the most basic Buddhist teachings, one of the things that's introduced to us is listening, reflecting, and meditating. You know, the three levels of activity of a student. Right? What does a student do in order to gradually internalize the Dharma in their practice? First, they listen to the teachings, then they reflect on the teachings, and then they meditate on the teachings. And in one way or another, these three levels are progressively, bring about progressively a deeper understanding. Okay. Useful. But let's not stop here. because it's easy to just say, okay, that's the role of the student. You know, let's tell everybody, first you listen, then you reflect, and then you meditate. And these three activities are going to progressively help you to get a deeper understanding of the Dharma teachings. But let's think of it instead in terms of an understanding, a much broader understanding in general of human beings and how they learn. And how can we take that structure and understand it not only from the perspective of the learner, as the responsibility on the side of the learner, you listen, you reflect, and you meditate, but what does that mean for a teacher? What does that mean for a curriculum, for a course structure? You know, what are the ramifications of that structure in a much broader and a much deeper sense? So, for example, we can start with, you know, level one, listening. When someone's listening, what's happening in that situation? If we look at it from the perspective of the what can the program or the curriculum or the teacher be offering to the student who's at that level of learning, we can think about this in terms of, okay, listening could mean receiving initial information, for example, you know, receiving the sort of the basic information of what we're studying, what we're talking about, what we're exploring together. So we're talking a bit about transmission of knowledge here. So we could look at transmission of knowledge not just from the perspective of being the student and having to listen, what is our activity, but what does the program do? From the side of the program, how does the program and how does the teacher as the what's the word I want? Sorry, sometimes Italian gets in the way and my English disappears. what does the teacher as the vehicle of the program, of the curriculum, what's the role of the teacher here? So we can think about, how do I, as a teacher, transmit new information effectively? That's an important question. Because we're not transmitting to a wall. We're not transmitting to a tape recorder or a video machine. We're transmitting to individuals. And each one of those individuals possibly has different ways of receiving information, different modalities of learning, different modalities of listening. And so then it becomes, if my role as a teacher is not just, you know, to transmit information, doesn't matter who's on the receiving end, but instead my role as a teacher is to facilitate the learning of those folks who are sitting in front of me, then I need to be taking into account what's going on with them. What are their listening and learning modalities? Some people may work, and maybe listening isn't the modality that's going to work for everybody. You know, already, if we use listening, reflecting, and meditating, we've categorized people. So what about people who don't learn by listening, for whom listening is a great difficulty, but they learn really well by reading, or they learn really well by manipulating things and actually getting in and doing something? Listening as a label becomes limiting. transmitting knowledge becomes, you know, a new way of talking about this level of teaching learning interaction that opens up panoramas that perhaps listening might close the door to. So we can think about, we need to remember people have different learning styles, different receiving styles for information. And then we're going to start thinking about ways of transmitting new information that allow people within whatever way they are to be on the receiving end and actually be learning in the process. Then we move on to reflecting. Reflecting as an action of the student, that's one thing. So when we're thinking of it in this bigger context of a curriculum, of a teacher as the vehicle of the curriculum, of the program, then maybe we can think of it in terms of critical thinking. Actually, you know, we got the material. Sometimes I think of all this. I remember Allison used to use the metaphor of making bread. You know, so we start out getting the flour and the water and the salt and the eggs and whatever, and then we knead it. You know, we put it all together and we knead the dough. So we work out our doubts. We work out our difficulties of understanding. We work out, you know, other people's views that are different from ours and how we can understand different perspectives. All of this through critical thinking. So, but as a teacher, that means we need to help those students by providing an environment, by providing opportunities, by providing activities that stimulate critical thinking, that allow people to be giving, to be bringing out their doubts and their, not just doubts, you know, examining, going deeper, looking at the ramifications of things, being able to expand and deepen one's understanding of information received previously, challenging thought, learning how to think, learning how to debate. And then we move on to meditation. Meditation being the methodology, the method that the Dharma provides us as a student to integrate, to absorb, and gradually to make what we've learned part of us, to embody our understanding through becoming transformed, to actually change within ourselves. So it's no longer a question of just facts and notions in the head. It's instead what we've learned, we actually absorb into our bones, into our behavior, into our way of seeing and relating and connecting with the world, into our view. So my point here is that Lama gave us, in my view, in all of, we have quotations, we have articles, we have writings, we have transcripts of things that Lama said that on the surface seem quite simple in some ways. They seem simple. I don't have another word for it. They seem quite simple, and yet, if we sit down with so many things that Lama said and actually think them through also in terms of our own understanding of, you know, what are we talking about here? We're talking about education. We're talking about the role of a teacher, the role of a student, the interaction between the two. How does learning take place? Everything that Lama says has an incredible amount of depth that I think we haven't plumbed sufficiently, in all honesty. Just looking at this little structure of, we have a system in Buddhism, and, you know, here we have a system, listening, reflecting, and meditating, that has an incredible amount of depth to it that can teach us not only about listening, reflecting, and meditating as the actions of a student, but that have ramifications on our programs, that have ramifications on how we teach and how we create curricula. I think there's an immense amount here that we have yet to deconstruct, that we have yet to enter into sufficiently. In my experience, Lama talked a lot about teachers and teaching, a lot. One of the documents that was sent to you all, that I asked Marianne to send out, is this article called Mahayana, which Lama wrote, which was published in Educare magazine in March of 1984. Educare was a magazine that the Universal Education Organization at the time sought to publish for several years, published out of London with a small team of folks, including T.Y. Tupdinyeshe, who at the time was a nun and then later wasn't, with Lynette Littman and Rob Green and a few other people who participated and contributed. And this particular article, Mahayana, Lama wrote, and I was his scribe, basically. So what we would do is I would go and have an appointment with Lama, and he would talk and tell me what he wanted in his article. And then I'd go away and put it together the best I could and bring it back to Lama, and he would edit it and tell me what to change and what to move and so on. And that's how this article came about. It's not long. It's quite brief, but it is in its heart, in my view, it has an immense amount of information with regard to Lama's view of universal education. And in particular, Lama's view with regard to what it means to be a teacher and the role of a teacher in facilitating learning in students. It's, I think it's easy, if we have lots and lots of stuff going on in our tradition, in our Buddhist tradition, around teachers and gurus. And, you know, and what is that? What that means? What is that role? On the other hand, in reading this article and in working on this article with Lama, I came away with a very humble view of what it means to be a teacher. Even the word teacher can tend to carry with it this kind of connotation of having something that you're sort of feeding someone else in some sort of way. Some, you know, you've got it and the other guy doesn't. And so, you know, so you're in a superior position and giving over something to someone who doesn't have what you've got. Whereas instead, I came out of this this whole process of writing together with Lama this article with a very different view of being a teacher, meaning more this sort of position of to help the other person learn, to facilitate in whatever way possible the learning of that individual, which puts the other person at the center of the process. And I'm just a helper. I'm an important helper, but I'm just a helper. This, at least for me, this was what I got from much of this, is that the teacher is a magical element in the process of learning. Because when the teacher is transformed, then the whole educational experience for the student and for the learner is transformed. But that comes from really lowering one's ego, really putting the other at the center of the process. And what does that mean? What that often means is that the person, rather than the subject matter, is the most important element. That person's growth, that person's learning process, that person's development process becomes all important. And the subject matter, although not unimportant, becomes somewhat secondary. So then when, for example, Lama says, hold on, I've got to find the phrase here. Lama says, a good relationship between students and teachers is so important. It should be based, first of all, on kindness and respect. For this to occur, a good atmosphere is needed. And although this comes from both sides eventually, the teacher should take very special care in the beginning to create this atmosphere of openness and loving kindness. Few teachers know how to create such an environment of seeking, such an atmosphere of loving kindness. It may not seem simple, but let's think about it. One of the things, an atmosphere of loving kindness, in one way or another, presupposes that if you have 25 students, 20, 15, 20, 25 students in front of you, that each student, at the very least, feels safe. Each student, at the very least, feels valued. That requires a great deal from a teacher. It requires equanimity. Even before we can talk about kindness and respect, it's very easy for all of us to carry around with us prejudices, oftentimes prejudices that we don't even recognize. To be able to provide an atmosphere of kindness and respect to all students starts on the basis of equanimity. One of the things that I found interesting in reading about difficulties in education in the past was this story, and I'm sure many of you have already heard this story, with regard to an experiment, a really horrible experiment that went quite awry in which in a school, students were divided into classes according to ability. So, you know, there was a class where all the students were kind of top quality students, and there was another class where all the students were pretty mediocre, if not even less so. But the teachers didn't know about the background of the students. So the teachers for these two classes were told that the classroom of students who were of the top quality was actually a class of students who were not very smart, who were, you know, who had bad grades in the past, bad behavior, and so on. And that teacher was given that information about her class, whereas the other class, where the kids actually had lots of problems, including behavior problems, but also study problems and whatnot, their teacher was told that she had the best students in school. And then what happened? A disaster, frankly, at least a disaster for one class. For the kids who were scholastically behind, who had problems, but whose teacher thought that they were super A students, that's how she treated them. And they rose to the occasion. They all got better. They all became really good students, as it turned out, because that's how she worked with them. That's how she taught them. And instead, the kids who were in reality super A students, whose teachers thought they were ignorant and badly behaved and not very smart and all of that, that's how she treated them. And that's what they became. And apparently, this went on for this experiment, they allowed to go on for about 3 months. Until somebody pulled the plug and said, there's something really bad going on here. But as it turned out, the effect on the class of good students lasted for many of them for most of their lives. Many of them dropped out of school. They didn't do well after that. Their confidence in themselves, in many cases, was shot. Whereas the other students who had been treated with not just respect, in some ways great expectation, you know, that they had these capabilities and could be good students, they went on to do great. So my point here is that you transform the teacher, you transform the educational process.
Connie, can I just, I don't want to interrupt you, but I have to say, yes. And just so that we can have some questions. Yes. So if you could wrap up, you know, a few minutes.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay. So.
No hurry.
You know, the message that I got from Lama was very much a transformative, student-centered approach to teaching. Very individualized, very, you know, if we look at some of the other citations from Lama, where he talked about, I'm just searching at the moment, you know, that working with the whole human being, you know, that we need to unify, bring together, you know, our scientific side, our spiritual side, our emotional side, our social side, our intellect, our heart, and so on. You know, this whole view of the individual, which also then clearly ties in to a deeper understanding of interdependence as we go on. So anyway, I'm gonna give you one very, very short story. Which from Lama, which had an amazing, a really strong effect on me as a teacher, and it's something that I refer back to a lot, which is apparently in, I can't remember what year it is, sorry, it was maybe like 1983, it wasn't very long before Lama passed away. He taught in Geneva at the university. He taught a course on life, death, and after death. And they didn't have anybody who was a Dharma student to translate Lama's teaching. And so they got a student from the university who was a professional translator to, they engaged this kid to come in and translate for Lama. And, you know, Lama was incredibly vivacious and, you know, dramatic and, you know, really incredibly sort of vibrant in his teaching. And here was this kid who they'd asked to come translate, who was sitting next to Lama translating, and he was all stiff and nervous, and you almost couldn't hear him. And so obviously the message and the medium were quite different here. And so this didn't go on very long before Lama sort of took a drink, took a pause, and he sort of leaned down to this young man and very, very kindly and very quietly, he said to him, you know, are you okay? are you a little bit nervous? And this kid sort of, you know, big eyes and very stiff, he nodded. And Lama just very, very quietly whispered to him, he said, please, you have to think that you're nobody. The moment you think you're somebody, you can't do your job right. And he just gave him a little pat on the shoulder. And then, you know, he sat up and, you know, Lama sat back up and he took a pause still. And apparently people who were there, I heard a couple of people who were actually there said they watched this kid, and he just sort of, he thought a minute, and then he just sort of went, whew. He took this huge sigh and relaxed, and everything went much better, much different. And personally, for me as a teacher, this is how I think about being a teacher, is being nobody. You know, sometimes I also think about Aya Kema's book, you know, being nobody, going nowhere. But for me, you know, this message from Lama has been incredibly helpful as a teacher. And anyway, so I just thought to share that. Thank you. Sorry, didn't mean to go on too long.
Please, I know if everyone is enjoying listening to you as much time, they don't want you to stop, but we really want to see if folks have questions.